Wizard of Oz, don't you love that? I mean, such a classic, right? So there's so much in it, and sometime we'll do a series on it. Jean Houston has a book out called The Wizard of Oz that really opens it up, but there's lots of good stuff out there on it. But what happens in the story? You know, the lion's story is all about being afraid, right, initially, and then being on the journey toward his courage, and he brings along his spiritual friends. And so we're starting a journey. It's a very short mini-series this week and next week. And it's basically about going from fear through the transformation process. Today's is all about finding spiritual refuge, taking spiritual refuge, making spiritual refuge. And next week is about developing implicit trust. And so as we work to bring forth the refuge, to understand the fear a bit, we need to get a little bit more into it. So what are some things that we fear collectively? You know, researchers tell us the number one fear is what?
Failure.
Oh, lots of ideas. Okay. Public speaking is sometimes one and sometimes two. Sometimes it's ahead of death. It depends upon the poll you listen to. And it depends upon where we are in the moment, right? When our knees are shaking and we're about to go up on a stage somewhere. So, but either way, they're pretty big fears for a lot of people. And so death, let's start with that one because that's a biggie. So I often ask my partner Brenda, like I try things out on her when I'm preparing a talk or I ask her questions. So she's kind of used to this. But yesterday, you know, she's organizing our garage. We've just moved in. And so she's deep in that. And I come in and say, tell me about your fear of death. And she's like, it's like always some bizarre question, you know. But bless her heart, she always stops and really listens and answers in a reflective way. And so she said, you know, I'm not really afraid of death. She said, what I'm afraid of is how I will meet my death. Isn't that true for a lot of us? Yeah. We're not so, maybe some of us not as afraid of death, but certainly the idea of suffering and sickness or accidents or whatever, violence, whatever it is that our minds can dream up, right, as the most horrible way to go, we've probably thought it and worried about it even at times. And so it is just, you know, when we do that, what are we doing? Exactly what our friends just did down the aisle, right? Dorothy, Scarecrow, Tin Man, coming down the aisle, lions and tigers and bears, oh my, lions and tigers and bears, oh my. And then guess what we manifest? A lion, right? So the more we spin on the real in our mind of what it is that we fear, the more we bring it forth. Same thing is true. It's a principle, right? It works no matter how you work it. Same thing is true if you work it for your visions and your dreams and you keep spinning on that, affirming what it is that you want to bring into your life, what you want to raise up in your life. The more we think about that, the more we attract it. The principle is impersonal in that way. It just works. And so you work it the way you work it. So we don't want to be affirming what it is that we fear, and we do that by worrying and worse yet, talking about it, because it's another level of creation, right? Bringing it into being by speaking about it, thinking about it, speaking about it. So we want to move away from that, right? Get into our places of refuge, creating refuge for ourselves to let that fear ease and maybe even completely melt away and transform. So this other fear, public speaking, why are we afraid to public speak? What is it about public speaking that's so scary? Or public singing, worse yet, for me.
Making a mistake,
right? We're afraid to make a mistake. We're going to botch the whole deal. We're going to ruin it for everyone else we're performing with or we're sharing with. We're going to, you know, say the wrong thing. We're supposed to be funny and we're not going to be funny. People are going to laugh at us instead of with us. We're going to be humiliated, ridiculed, you know, whatever. We can add a lot of stuff to that, right? We can make it larger than life. And our knees can be shaking. And I remember early in my professional career, I was in the field of public relations. And I actually had studied public communication as part of my undergrad, but I was still so scared to speak in public. And I got up in front of my bosses, there were two bosses there, and my team, and I was new, and I gave this presentation. And I was so glad to be done. I couldn't wait to just like slink into my seat, you know? And then they asked me questions. Oh. And I tell you, I kid you not, I was so paralyzed with self-consciousness that I could not compute the question. I kept asking my new boss to repeat, can you repeat the question again? And it's like my mind just couldn't let it in because I so wanted to sit down. So, you know, there can be those points where we just completely like sort of freeze up and paralyze ourselves with this kind of fear. But why we fear this kind of thing of being in front of people is because the ego is afraid it's not going to look good, right? So it's defense of the ego. In Robert Brummett, he's a faculty member at Unity Worldwide, at the not Unity Worldwide Ministries, but what we call Unity, the campus. He's been for many years, and he was one of my teachers. And he's written a lot of books. You might know the name, Robert Brummett. Some of you are nodding. He wrote a book called The Greater Reality, and he goes through the evolution of human consciousness, basically. And he says, you know, today, although we do sometimes worry, of course, about our physical survival, the most collective energy we have is around our psychological survival. So it's the defense of the ego, protecting the ego, and how we appear and how we show up. It's that constant sort of shuck and jive that we do, you know, to protect. And so that's why we fear public speaking so much. But like anything else, we practice, right? Whatever it is that we are afraid of, it's because it's the unknown and it's unfamiliar, and so we become familiar with it. It's really that simple. And so this fear can begin to melt away for us. And one by one, we can start ticking off the fears, right? How about love? Anybody afraid a little bit of love and intimacy when you first start falling in love, or you meet somebody you really care about and you really want to make that connection happen, and then all the stuff comes up, right? What if they don't like me? What if I, you know, blah, blah, blah. What if I don't get accepted? What if I'm rejected? What if they say no if I ask them out? So all these things, you know, the R&B singer Jasmine Sullivan says, I'm not scared of lions, tigers, and bears, oh my, but I'm scared of loving you. She says, I'm not scared to perform at a sold-out affair. That's right, but I'm scared of loving you. Anybody relate to that? When it gets down to that open-hearted vulnerability, and we'll talk more about that next week, but really that can be a big fear. For sure, it's something that I relate to. I've done all kinds of crazy stuff in my life and jumped out of airplanes and walked across fire and all kinds of stuff. But I remember being at my first trip that I took a group to Peru, and my sister went on the trip. And we were working with a shaman, our whole group. It was sunrise, and we were beautiful mountainside of Machu Picchu. And he brought us around the backside, and he said, okay, what we're going to do now is fly. And so he held our feet, and we arched over this rock into this wide valley of nothingness, high up, and flew, you know, and could see, you know, some of us even flapped our wings, and we could see the mountains and the sky, everything kind of from that upside down vantage point. And so when it got to be my turn, I actually was kind of excited to go, because I'm strange like that in some ways. Or unusual, I should say. And so my sister was there, and who knows me, obviously, my whole life, and she was one of the people holding my feet, and then Jorge Luis Delgado was our shaman friend, and he was holding my feet. And she says to me, man, you're not afraid of anything, are you? And as I'm going back, I said, oh, yes, I am. I'm afraid of intimacy and relationships. But you know, actually, that probably was really affirming to carry my real fear with me, right? And leave it out there, hopefully. Since then, I've gotten better, I think. I think in this area, I'll have to ask Brenda. No, I think I'm much, much better in this area. So, you know, we're always a work in progress, right? This is what we do. We're on the walk. We're on our spiritual journey. And so meeting our fears one by one could be one of the best things I think we do. You know, because this is where the block comes. This is what stops us from our good. This is what stops us from living the fulfillment of life that we are meant to live. This is what can even choke out the life of spirit itself expressing through us, the light and the love that we're wanting to shine out and be in the world. And so looking at these fears is a worthy look. Failure, right? Big one for a lot of people. But really, I think bigger is success. You know, because it's kind of that flip side thing. We think we feel we're fearing failure, but really, we're often fearing success. Because what will happen if I get more successful, or if I get more prosperous in some way, or if I, you know, rise to the next challenge and the next challenge? Maybe I'll lose the people that are part of my inner circle. You know, that's one fear that people have. A sense of belonging will change. Maybe I'll be challenged in other ways that I'm not really up to. Maybe the daily rhythm of my life will change in ways because I will be, you know, kept to a higher demand of some kind. So there's lots of fears that could, smaller fears that can come around that one. I think Marianne Williamson said it best in the quote that many of you probably know, about it's not so much that we fear the darkness as we fear our own light, right? It's not so much the inadequacies that we fear, but it's our own brilliance that we fear. And so what does that break down to? It's like a fear of God itself, right? A fear of our own divinity, our own light, our own power, our own potential. So that's what that's connected to. And that's not something we want to be afraid of, right? Because that's where we get our love, our sense of protection, our sense of possibility, our peace. This is where we find our refuge of all places. The most high form is when we are in that quiet, silent space, right? When we have a meditation together in this room, you can feel that collective, it's like peace and safety and love all kind of wrapped together in this just lovely space of connection and consciousness with the presence of spirit that is available to us. So knowing that, then we carry that wherever we go. There are other ways, though, backing up a bit, of how we might create spiritual refuge for ourselves. What did the lion do? He gathered up his spiritual friends, right? He joined new spiritual friends on the yellow brick road journey of life, on his spiritual path. And that path was toward the transformation of courage. And so what do spiritual friends do for us? They encourage us. They let us know that they see the courage in us. And they know that we can do it, right? There are supporters. There are partners in adventure. And so our spiritual friends are with us all along that path, that, if you will, yellow brick road, that is our spiritual path. So gathering up our spiritual friends and community and family is an important piece. And where we don't have the support, maybe we choose to share differently or not as much until we feel like this person really gets it and can hold that high consciousness of possibility for me. We don't necessarily want to share when we're on that journey of transformation with people who we know are going to say, that ain't going to work. You have those folks around, you know? That'll never work. They'll tell you all the reasons why it won't work. Well, early when we're coming out with this new idea is not the time to share with those folks then. We want to have it really seated inside of us, right? So that's one way, is through spiritual friendship. Also through sanctuary, right? We call this room our sanctuary. I hope and pray that this is a very safe place for you, that this is a place that feels like a safe haven, a spiritual refuge, a place where you can lay down your fears and concerns, where you can lay down your guard, even, and be open to the love and the welcome that is here for you. It's also something that we find in nature in certain places for us that are special, maybe near certain trees, and hopefully also within our own homes. Hopefully we can create that kind of sacred space, that kind of safe haven, that when we walk through the door of our home or a room we're renting, we feel that, this is a really good place to sort of recharge. Maybe you're somebody, or even if you haven't done this before, you might want to try creating an altar or putting some sacred items in a space that help reflect for you the spirit of God, the faces of God, the sense or the essence of God. So it's near to you even in an outer way. I love that. So we now, for the first time in my life, I have a room in our new home that can be dedicated to yoga and meditation. I call it the temple. And it's so great to be able to enter the temple and just have those things there, a very Zen-like space, but the things there that really reflect the spirit to me, and to be able to just be in that container. So for all of us, we don't always have that space. I haven't had it up until now, but we can create it in small ways. We don't have to have a big space. It's lovely when we do, but if we don't, A small space can be that kind of reflection for us. Or you may then find that you love it so much that you begin to gather sacred items and put them in different places around your home. All these ways are ways that we create spiritual refuge, sanctuary. And we can be a sanctuary for other people. Did anybody join the safety pin movement that was out on Facebook? Yeah, some of you know about it. Oh, a lot of you in this service know about it. So there, I heard about it on Facebook. I don't know where it was actually launched, but around the time that, it's still going on, but a lot of people, obviously, in our society, in our neighborhood, in our communities, do not feel safe, maybe more so than your own experience. You know, there's a lot going on. Immigrants don't feel very safe right now. A lot of Muslims don't feel very safe. You know, there's a lot of different transgendered people don't feel very safe. You know, there's a lot of groups of people. And I don't mean to generalize like all these people don't feel safe. I just mean there's a sense of not feeling safe within these groups right now for various reasons. And so the safety pin, wearing the safety pin, tells people that I'm safe. I'm not going to judge you. I'm not holding prejudice against you. I welcome and I'm inclusive of all people, of all differences. And so I'm somebody you can come to if you need a safe space. I'm somebody you can come to for a hug or a handshake or a prayer or a listening heart. Whatever it is that we have to offer, that's what that symbol says. So it's really a lovely, I have it on a couple of my jackets, but I need more of them. So I encourage you to wear those because it's really a beautiful symbol. There's somebody who did this in a very heroic way of safety. Her name is Irina Sender. And Irina Sender, I just need to look at my note because suddenly that doesn't, no, that is the right name. Irina Sender. So Irina Sender in World War II, during the Holocaust, kind of masqueraded as a plumber and a sewer specialist. I mean, she learned the trade, but she learned it for a very specific reason. Because she was going in to smuggle out children and infants to save them. And so she had a toolbox that she carried, and she would put infants in her toolbox. And then she put them in her truck. And she had burlap sacks, and she would carry smaller children in the burlap sacks and put them in her truck. She trained a dog to bark at the Nazi soldiers. So when she was coming in and out of the gate of the ghetto where she was working, the soldiers didn't want to come anywhere near this dog that was barking like crazy. And so she succeeded in getting 2,500 children and infants out of harm's way and saving their lives. Isn't that tremendous? I have like chills all over my body. I've told this story and looked at it, but like this time it really sank in. Yeah. Talk about being a safe haven. Talk about emulating spirit as spiritual refuge for everyone. It's like, I am the safe harbor, and I'll do anything to make sure that these children know that they are safe. That's what she did. Then, on top of it, she made a list of all the names of the children that she rescued, kept them in a glass jar, buried in her backyard until the war was over, the Holocaust had receded, and she got that list out, and she reconciled whatever family she could. Now, a lot of the parents had died, had been killed, but some of them hadn't, and she was successful to some degree in that. And those children that had now been orphaned, she did her best to get them into adoptive families and to foster homes. She dedicated her entire life to this. She's been up for the Nobel Peace Prize twice, and twice she's been passed up. So next time she's up, now you know who she is. We might consider casting our votes if we have a voice in that in any way. Yeah, so we can be the safe haven for others, whether it be just by wearing a pin or doing these really amazing, heroic things like Irina Sender did. We are the safe harbor. One of the ways we, I think, get to more of a spiritual refuge kind of place, which is a connection, a conscious connection with spirit, is by slowing down. So I've been an outrigger canoer. The time I was living in Santa Barbara, I started with a team, the outrigger canoe team, where we paddle with six people in a boat. And then the next year, Brenda and I both didn't want to be on the team because it was a little more intense than we wanted. And so we just went on with a recreational group that went out once a week. And so six women going out in this boat just for fun, paddling in the ocean. I mean, really pretty amazing thing to be able to do. And we had two Mary Lou's on the team. Mary Lou with an O, who was real relaxed and laid back. She was usually our steers person. And Mary Lou with no O, who was like, had a little bit more of a shrill voice, and she was always the one who was making sure all the life preservers were untied and available, you know, during our time. And she, you know, the voice of safety, basically, of the whole team. So one day it was particularly foggy, and I get out of my car and I see that Mary Lou with an O is standing by the canoes, ready to take the covers off and take the boats out. But the fog is so dense, you can hardly see even into the harbor. I mean, it's like 10, maybe 10 feet of clarity into the harbor. And so I said to Mary Lou, oh, it looks like we're not going to be able to go out today. And she says, oh, really? Looks all right to me. You don't want to go out? And then the next person comes, and each person said about the same thing I did. And then Mary Lou comes, you know, no, oh. Oh my gosh, you guys, there's no way we can get out there. It's totally not safe. We don't have light on the boat, and there's speedboats out there, and there's no way. We can't even go in the harbor. It's not okay. You know. Karen Drucker has a song, I will only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. Isn't that beautiful? And the same held true for us as a team. We could only go as fast as the slowest or the most safety conscious in the group felt safe to go. Right? So we didn't go out, of course. And on other times when we went out, we found a compromise of, well, we'll paddle, you know, if there were big waves or whatever, we'll paddle in the harbor and then we'll hug the wharf and then we'll go kind of close to the shore. But the point is that whatever groups we're in, if we can be reminded that everybody has a different sense of personal safety. And so just because we feel all chilled out about it, doesn't mean that everybody in the group does. And so if we're going to truly operate as one, which when you're outrigger canoeing, you have to be paddling in rhythm. You have to be operating as one. This is one of the things I love about it, because it's this great outer experience of oneness. And so same is true for an effective team, right? You got to have everybody in it, everybody giving their best, everybody working together as one. And in order to do that, there must be safety. There must be, and what comes from that, creating that, is understanding, right? That there's understanding now of our differences and a compassionate willingness to come together. So this is one of those ways where we slow down as a group to understand everybody and offer compassion, but we also slow down for ourselves. We also affirm, as Karen did, that I will only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. So spiritual friends, creating sanctuaries, being safe havens ourselves, slowing down, and then the one I mentioned at the beginning, silence. These are all S's, by the way. Silence, deep silence, right? Just that time of prayer and meditation touches for us the very spirit of God, allows us to know what we affirm every week. Wherever God is, I am, and all is well. So just like we practiced with public speaking or whatever it was to get more familiar so that our fear could go away, so too we practice our spiritual practice so that spirit is constantly readily available to us. So when there is violence, like there was in our neighborhood this week, there was a murder right down the street here in our neighborhood, many of you know about, when those things do happen, we can be that energy that is loving and blessing the victim, the perpetrator, the families, the neighborhood, the area. I mean, what a beacon of light we are here, right? This beacon of light shines out about through this community and county and beyond, far beyond, into the world. And we ourselves are carriers of that peace, of that protection, of that sense of all is well. So are we going to live this?
Yes,
we are. Let's close out with an affirmation together. Spirit is my refuge. I am eternally safe. Let's say it one more time. Spirit is my refuge. I am eternally safe. And so it is.